This is Teachers Talk Radio, and
you are listening live at ttradio.org or to join in the conversation, download the Podbean app and search Teachers Talk Radio. Follow the hashtag TTRadio. Tune in, talk it out with Teachers Talk Radio.
And good afternoon, and welcome to the Drive Home Show with myself, Neil Mullen. It's nice to have you join the show this week. I hope you've had a good start of the week also. This week's show, we have got Gary Freeman, who is going to join us in around about 15 minutes time to discuss EHCP plans and good points of those, bad points, and discuss how they can be used for good for our SEND learners, particularly in mainstream educational settings, how they can be really beneficial to providing support and additional information for teachers in mainstream education. So Gary will join us in around about 10, 15 minutes time, and we'll have a chat to him about those aspects of EHCP plans. Then in the second half of the show, we'll kind of discuss a little bit more on EHCP plans and talk around inconsistencies of those. There is different templates used of EHCP plans around the country, which can prove pretty difficult when SEND learners move from different educational authorities. So we'll kind of look at the inconsistencies of the EHCP plan, good points and bad points, and kind of extend upon that from what we discussed with Gary in the first half of the show. Again, would love to hear your views and your thoughts on EHCP plans. Maybe you have experience of, may have experience of reading some EHCP plans that you've thought haven't been the best. You may have been involved in EHCP reviews and really put forward cases to improve EHCP plans, or you are maybe just new to assisting in drawing up EHCP plans and want to know a little bit more information. So please do call, text in. It'd be great to hear other people's experiences on that. For the listeners out there that are not sure what an EHCP plan is, so an EHCP plan is an educational healthcare plan. And that'll be primarily for SEND learners with a diagnosis of a particular SEND need. That can be anything from complex and profound multiple disabilities to be diagnosed with autism, to a specific learning disability. In some cases, the EHCP plans have been used for learners with severe vulnerability, so things like severe asthma and complex diabetes as well. In some cases, I've seen those being used. EHCP plans were kind of introduced in 2015, and they replaced the old statements. So previously, there used to be a statement for a SEND learner, but in 2015, when the SEND Code of Practice came about, there was a shift to educational health and care plans. The reason behind that was kind of the clues in the name. It was designed as a push towards a more collaborative approach for SEND learners, joining together the three main sectors that are involved with SEND learners, so education, schools, colleges, other providers really for SEND learners, health, so that can be you know, hospitals, doctors, nurses, specific health staff, such as physios, speech and language therapists, that type of thing, in care settings as well. So if those SEND learners are in care homes, are in foster care, are in adoption, then the educational healthcare plan was designed so that all of those organisations, all those sectors came together and worked much more collaboratively. That is the design of the EHAP plan. In reality, there is differences across the country and in different local authorities about how effectively those sectors come together. So hopefully we'll discuss that with Gary when he joins us. So EHAP plans are a legal document for our SEND learners. Once they've got that, that stays with them. So EHAP plans are designed for SEND learners to run from 0 to 25 years of age. In reality, more SEND learners will have their EHAP plans closed between the ages of 16 to around 23. There's not many SEND EHAP plans for SEND learners that are still around at that upper age limit, really. It tends to be that SEND learners will have their EHAP plans move through the educational system, and once they kind of reach either a college, a sixth form, maybe a foundation learning provision, where they are on that road to increased further training or further education, where their support will be given in a slightly different way, or they're on the road to employment, then an EHCP plan's kind of closed and will no longer be used with that particular learner. The EHCP plan, it's a working document and should be added to throughout the year in its intended purpose. Within the plan, it kind of gives an overview of that learner. So it will give a background to the learner's home situation. It will give a diagnosis of the learner, either primary one, if they've got a secondary one that's valid and needs to be put in there, then that will also be in there. It will also give kind of strengths and weaknesses in relation to the four areas of a EHAP plan. So there's four particular areas that it focuses on, which is cognition and learning, communication, physical sensory needs, and the other ones just slip my mind, but it might come back to me. So there's four key areas, and it will kind of give strengths and weaknesses of that particular learner in relation to their need. In addition, it will provide some outcomes for each learner, some specific outcomes that they're working towards in their school, in their college, wherever it may be. And it will also give allocation of what support and how often that support is given. So if a particular learner with an EHAP plan requires a one-to-one teaching assistant, that will be stated in their EHAP plan. If they have regular opportunities to visit speech and language therapists within their school, that will also be included in their plan. And it's very much tailored to that individual learner, their needs. And that's kind of how it's written. EHAP reviews should have to take place a minimum 12 months apart. Now, usually a lot of schools and colleges will use that time frame, and it will usually be 12 months between each EHCP review. Some schools will do 6 monthly reviews, and will do they will do 6 month reviews with parents and carers before a more formal review, where they will have the EHCP officer from the local authority come in and write up a plan. So schools kind of do it differently, but it is a legal requirement that plan is reviewed at least every 12 months. With at that review, it is a collaborative process where the opportunity for education, health and care staff can come together along with parents, carers and any other key external people involved. So you could have professionals such as social workers, you could have virtual school staff involved in learners in care attend that meeting as well. You could also have adoptive parents come to that meeting. So it's a real opportunity for everyone to get together at that review and get involved with updating that plan, the ETP plan. The differences between EETP plans in special schools compared to mainstream schools is that special schools will have a lot more flexibility in terms of outcomes and in terms of potentially offering more individual curriculum and a more tailored approach to each individual need. However, EETP plans in mainstream education can also be a real benefit to not only the learner but also to the staff and the support staff that are teaching that learner as well. So the EETP plan is kind of the go-to document for a teacher within mainstream school to kind of get a flavour and a background to that particular SEND learner. It'll allow the teacher and the support staff that's working with them to understand the background of the learner, what schools they've attended, what kind of home life that they have, again, what kind of things that they like to do, what kind of strengths and weaknesses they have in relation to the various sections within the EETP plan and what support that they currently access. Now, it may be the case that in an EETP plan, you get a learner that has access to a one-to-one teaching assistant and has come to a mainstream school and doesn't have that just yet. That's when the EETP plan becomes really effective because it's there in black and white to say that they require that support in order to access the curriculum. It may also provide a real blueprint on the times when a specific learner needs additional support. So during non-core subjects, a SEND learner within mainstream school may go and access a bit more physical therapy if they have a physical disability. If they have social, emotional, mental health problems, they may access a counsellor during a lunchtime session, or they may need regular check-ins with their form tutor. So that the EETP plan in regards to the mainstream environment is more effective in terms of putting it in black and white of what that learner specifically needs in which points throughout the day, the week, the month, the whole academic year that they're going to access it. And then it's up to the school in question to kind of meet those needs as much as they can. EETP plans can also be slightly inaccurate. EETP plans can be a little bit varied in terms of the quality of how they're written, in terms of the quality in which they are reviewed and the quality in which they are actually able to be implemented, really. So that's kind of a little bit of a brief overview. We do have Gary on the line, and hopefully Gary you can hear me.
I can indeed, Neil. Can you hear me all right?
Yeah, I can hear you loud and clear. Thank you very much for joining the show.
So you're welcome.
While we were waiting for you to join us, I was kind of just giving a brief overview on EETP plans. Now, we're kind of discussing EETP plans for SEND learners within a mainstream context today.
Yeah.
So What would you say are the benefits for staff in those mainstream environments of having that EHCP plan for Ascend Learner?
I think, oh, that's a leading question. I think really what it can give a number of benefits. I think one is certainty of the purpose of what you are doing, because as hopefully listeners will know, the provision that's in an EHCP Section F has to be followed, unless there are very, very good reasons why a school can't, but then they should tell the local authority. So on that basis, there is a degree of certainty around what you are doing to meet need. And therefore, in my experience, because I only ever talk from my experience, you can plan around that certainty. And also, you do get a sense of what you're doing is contributing to, shall we say, more structured and successful attainment for a child or young person. Because that's one of the purposes of an EHCP, which is to meet their need so that they can make progress and attain in a way that they almost certainly, but not always, almost certainly were not doing previously. So to me, it gives benefits in certainty, it gives benefits in planning and joint working. It also gives staff the knowledge and understanding that other professionals are involved in supporting that young person. So it's not just a particular teacher, a department, or even a whole school. You know that there are other people involved. And yes, you will have to look for the SENCO to lead the way on that one and provide information not only on Section F of an EHCP, but also the advice that other professionals give. So it does help staff to understand what's needed. And I think the other main benefit, and I've left this till last deliberately, is that it provides staff with a very clear, hopefully a very clear understanding of what the needs of a particular child or young person are. They can often become blurred. They can often become conflated with, for example, behaviour. If not meeting that need produces behaviour which is not conducive to them learning and to others learning, then the two issues can become conflated. And having an EHCP allows someone a clearer idea and understanding of what the needs are and what those needs actually mean in practice for that child or young person.
Yeah, I think you've kind of really succinctly put forward what an EHCP plan, its purpose and almost how it should be used within yeah. that mainstream context. Yeah. I think for me, from my personal experiences, I've worked across both mainstream and specialist schools, I've worked in different local authorities. Is my frustration with EHCP plans is that if one particular learner has moved across a different local authority, then EHCP plan templates can vary a bit, and the quality of the information in there can vary. So
yes,
I think the question that I'm trying to ask is it a problem across both mainstream and special in terms of the quality of EHCP plans, and does that affect how a teacher would try and interpret and implement the information that's in the EHCP?
I think it does. It is in my experience, it's an issue up and down the length of England and across mainstream, special and alternative settings as well. Let's not forget alternative settings in this. It does cause some confusion, which is why I mentioned a few minutes ago that is perfectly natural and perfectly professional for any teacher who isn't clear about what something means in an EHCP to look to their Senko. That is the role of a Senko. You know, the code bit at the end of Senko is coordinator. So part of the role of coordinating and an implicit leader is that people can come to you and you guide and you advise. Now, you're absolutely right. The format of local of EHCPs differs tremendously from one authority to another. And I've seen a number of examples, again, throughout the length and breadth of England, where the quality and the layout is hugely variable, literally in neighbouring authorities. So they border each other, and the child can very easily move from one to another. And the new authority, by law, has to accept responsibility. It isn't the case of whichever authority they go to in terms of a school. It's where they live and where their parents pay council tax. And the differences can be tremendous. So in that case, it is up to the Senko to lead the way. And this is the significance and the importance of the role of Senko to me as one of them, in that they should lead the way by, if they do see differences, if they do see, and I've seen it often, any sluggishness, let's put it like that, in terms of the new authority assuming responsibility, they need to be working with parents. To address that, because parents can do things about that whole issue that schools cannot. So it's key that Senkos understand that part of their role of coordination and leadership is that working with parents to address issues. And of course, staff being unclear about what provision in Section F of an EHCP means is a major issue. Because that is the crux of what a school is doing to meet a child's needs.
Yeah, I think I agree with your point there, but I'm just thinking, just from my experiences in a mainstream setting, where the importance of the Senko is vital, and I totally agree with you that Senko is the key person within that school of how they drive forward. You know, the implementation of EHCP plans and how needs are met in term in relation to Section F. But just from my experience, often a Senko within a mainstream provision also has potentially teaching responsibilities. If we talk in a primary setting, they're often part time teaching, or if they're in secondary, it's kind of they may have other responsibilities in terms of, you know, a more senior role. So you can see how teachers may be slightly let down in terms of their shared collaboration with the Senko around the learner's EHCP. So how do we get around the problem of that? Because from my point of view, EHCP plans are a useful document in terms of the information and the meeting of needs, especially in Section F. But then how do we get around that problem within a mainstream environment? Is it a case of, as teachers, we should take a little bit more responsibility for seeking out clarification on that EHCP? Is it a responsibility for a school to give more allocated time for a Senko? I think
it's a whole school approach issue, and I think it's down to governors and head teacher. You know, we must remember that in a school setting, it's the governors that have got the overall responsibility. Head teacher, the general ethos, values, strategically and operation, day-to-day operation of the school. But yes, teachers do need to raise this more. But that can often depend, as I said, on the values of a whole school approach. Does a whole school have the approach where colleagues feel comfortable raising issues like that, that they're not clear about what something means, and there is an issue that they can't raise it with the Senko, or the Senko can't really do much about it because they don't have time? And it does depend to a large extent on the values of the school. I am aware, obviously, that that's more of an issue. It tends to be more of an issue in primary than secondary. because there's a lot more pressure, excuse me, especially in terms of having a class and teaching on primary SENCOs than there is on secondary ones. But it is a case, let's remember two things. One is an EHCP is mandatory. It's a legal document. It's not optional. It's not up for discussion. It's not, shall we do this, or how do you think we should do this, or how much of it should we do? It's mandatory. And secondly, there is teacher standards, and teacher standard 5 requires teachers to build into their teaching to an understanding of the different needs of children and young people. Now, of course, how we do that is a matter for professional discussion, professional decision, professional collaboration. Yes, that's true, and we all know it, but it's still a requirement. So there are different approaches to this. But again, in my experience, and we're only really into week two for most people in England. We're only in week two. Some have just started week three, but most week two of the new school year. I've already done training in some schools and mats. And you know what? There's one common thread has run through all of that training, which is a whole school approach to meeting special needs or additional needs. You know, personally, I'm not too keen. I'm becoming less and less keen on the word special. I'm tending to prefer the word additional. Special can cause issues that are quite unnecessary. But anyway, the common thread that's run through it has been a whole school approach. And this, of course, is largely in the hands of, yes, I mentioned governors, but largely in the hands of senior leaders, and particularly head teacher or principal.
Yeah, I think yeah, it's vital to remind everyone out there that's listening that the EHCP document is a legal obligation. It is mandatory to do that. But do you find sometimes when you are going and visiting certain schools that actually teaching staff and maybe senior leading staff are mainly just doing the obligatory work of the EHCP, doing what they need to do rather than what is probably best for the child?
I know what you're saying. Because, of course, an EHCP might only be reviewed once a year. You can actually review it as often as you like, provided you stick to the timeline for doing it. But it might only be reviewed once a year. Therefore, some of the provisions that are in Section F might well be outdated. They might not be needed because that young person might have made progress with something and they just don't need something. That's fine. And a teacher can do that. That's not ignoring the mandatory quality of Section F. It can do that. And there was a recent tribunal ruling, it was either spring this year or spring last year, where a judge actually recognised the fact that there is an issue around specificity of provision in Section F. It has to be specific, measurable, quantified. But he did recognise that there is an issue around that, which is if you don't have some flexibility in the provision in Section F, in other words, what do teachers do to meet a child's needs? You've got to have some flexibility in that, because otherwise, every time that a SENCO and a staff realise that a child really doesn't need a particular kind of provision, so they might not need a particular intervention, whether that's in class or out of class, every time they realise that, because a child is making good progress and the plan is working for that child, you'd have to call an annual review. And that isn't practical. It's wasteful of time. It's wasteful of resources. And meetings isn't what we're about. It's about supporting a young person. So therefore, you've got to have some flexibility. So to me, and I've always said this, I've encouraged staff to read what's in a plan, look at a young person's needs, look at what's in Section F, and yes, that's what you do. But if you think you can meet those needs by being flexible about some of the details in Section F, then talk to me about it. I won't ever say to someone, just do it, but come and talk to me. If you're thinking about doing something in a certain way because you think that will work for that young person, come and talk to me. It's all about relationships and understanding a child or a young person. Mm. We all know that some teachers have better relationships with some individuals than others. Mm. And relationship and understanding someone is the key. So if, you know, it's exactly what I've always said. If you've got a good relationship and you want to slightly vary what you do, but you're still sticking to the essence of what's in that provision, please talk to me. And if necessary, I would go back to parents. And if I felt it necessary, I would inform the local authority. Mm. I've never yet, and I have done that, I've never yet had any local authority come back to me and say, well, no, you can't do that because it's an obligatory document. Yeah. It simply said, we recognise what you're doing. You are doing your best to meet need. If you think that such and such a thing will work, and or if you honestly believe and you've got the evidence of progress that that child no longer needs that, then fine. And we can actually review it formally in X number of weeks' time at the annual review. But, yeah, so it's a question of a professional judgment. Yes, it's mandatory. It's obligatory. We have to do it. But there's always got to be a degree of flexibility. Mm. And, again, to come back to the same point, I think it's got to be the Senko that leads on that.
Yeah, I agree with that. And just from my personal experience, when I've worked in special schools, there's been that flexibility in approach of going
absolutely
to go on to the Senko and kind of saying, this is what's in Section F. I feel I want to try this. I'm going to almost
absolutely
pencil it in. But then yep. I think if you're in that mainstream environment and you've got bigger class sizes, maybe you're in secondary school where you're potentially only seeing that learner maybe once, twice a week, that can become quite hard, I suppose, to think about that specific learner and then to think about actually going to the Senko and remembering that specific thing that you want to put in Section F, whether that be an intervention or
support. Neil, can I just point out, I am not saying someone puts anything in Section F. No one can put anything in Section F apart from the local authority, based on professional advice or the agreed wishes of parents and school. Now, I'm not saying that a teacher should do that. I'm simply saying that, you know, to get to what you said, if you want to try something, then I always encourage staff, talk to your Senko, see what they think, and if it's worth trying, because your relationship is founded on relationships and connections, if you think that such and such a thing might well work for that young person, you know, as a Senko, I will say, try it. Because this is about being innovative as well as sticking to what the plan says, and we have to do that.
Yeah, but apologies if you misunderstood what I was trying to say, but the teacher within the special school can almost have that additional flexibility because they've got a smaller class size, more support to do it, will have probably a better an increased positive working relationship with the parent to suggest those changes. They can maybe schedule in more EATP reviews, perhaps, than a mainstream school. So I'm thinking for our mainstream colleagues out there who maybe have that send learner, and they're struggling to find time with the Senko. The Senko may be overwhelmed with the amount of, you know, learners that they have to, you know, review with the EATP plans. So I'm just thinking, what would you be? You've mentioned before it's all about relationships, and I'm just thinking in the times where we're going back to kind of less restrictions and there's lots of worries and lots of new additional things. It's how do we almost find that time? Is it a case of staff seeking out SLT to highlight this? Is it taking it to a governor level? I don't know. It's just a bit.
I mean, I think it is. It's again, it depends on the ethos and the values of the school. if there is very clearly a whole school approach to this and openness and staff are encouraged, then I think staff should raise it. But they can also raise it, don't forget, with their head of department, their middle leader. And I think one of the issues for me is that the role of the middle leader in provision for SEND children and young people is often completely forgotten about. Mm. They are really, really important people. Whenever I've spoken to class teachers, subject teachers, I make it clear that if they think there is an issue that they need to bring to me, either along the lines of what we've been talking about, or because they think that a young person has a particular need which isn't documented or isn't recognised or, you know, made provision for, the first person they need to go to is their head of subject, their middle leader, mm-hmm. To seek their advice first, because that person is their subject specialist.
Yeah.
And it's very important that we recognise that. So that's one way. I mean, I've been working with Senko in a part of the country where, in fact, two, where it had become pretty much normal standard daily practice for everybody to raise everything with the Senko. And of course, that Senko cannot, that system cannot be sustained.
No.
It's not practical.
No.
So in terms of time, that was a massive contributing factor. And in both cases, school is trying their best to look at devolving this responsibility, because a lot of it should be with middle leaders. Mm-hmm. And in a sense, they act as a sort of filter that only the real issues, the real cases that need to go to the Senko should go to them.
Yeah.
So that's a big thing. Mm-hmm. The other one is, of course, I did mention governors. The SEND governor has a role to play in this. And a Senko, if they feel overwhelmed, definitely needs to raise it with their line manager and their SLT, because it's not a requirement, but there is a strong piece of guidance in the code of practice that Senko should have admin support. I know there are many places where that is in place, and there are equally many schools where Senko has very little or none. So there is a SEND governor, there is talking to a line manager. But then equally, it's like, I don't know if you all listeners are familiar with it, you know, the story of the little girl throwing the starfish back into the sea. It's a little short story, but it illustrates the point about you can make a difference to one person. Well, you know what? If you can make a difference to one person, make that difference. And we all know that time is short, but it is sometimes a case of looking at how you spend your time as a Senko. One real large concern of mine, and it has been for a while, certainly before the pandemic, is Senko well-being, Senko emotional and mental health, and all driven by workload. And one thing that I make the point with, at every opportunity, and I will be at a couple of conferences I've been asked to talk at in October, I will be making the point there that a huge thing for me is the sheer amount of time that that Senkos spend on local authority paperwork. And most of it is completely unnecessary. Mm-hmm. And when they realise that it's like a light bulb moment. And to any colleagues who are Senkos, or anyone who's listening who works with a Senko, works closely with them, for example, it is worth pointing out that, you know, look at the so-called instructions in inverted commas that you get from your local authority. If you're trying to submit a request for a needs assessment, if you're trying to look at funding for an EHCP, because funding is obviously crucial to it, or even SEND notional budget funding, look at what you're being asked to do and decide whether it's lawful or not, and look at what the law says. Because in most cases, what Senkos are being asked to do is unnecessary and very, very often unlawful. And again, I speak from experience. And believe it or not, that is a huge factor in workload. So if you can submit a request for a needs assessment, because you're at that point with a child or a young person for an education, health and care needs assessment, hopefully to get them a plan. If you're at that point, why fill in 25 pages of a form when you can do it in two or three pages of an A4 letter? Mm. And that's an illustration.
It's a complex issue
is workload. And why I try and look at is, well, let's think about priorities and different ways to do the same thing.
I totally appreciate that. You know, from my previous experiences of working closely with the SENCO, their workload is probably the biggest, if not the biggest, in certain schools, if not at all. But I think you touched on it there before. With you mentioned about the pandemic, do you think? For me, I think the pandemic has probably exacerbated even more problems for the SENCO in terms of EHTPs, because, you know, EHTP reviews have probably taken place during lockdowns and remote periods of learning. So then has staff been able to fully contribute as much as they would have done in a face-to-face setting? Have parents had that opportunity to access the technology to get onto those reviews? I think the pandemic's probably had an impact on probably quite a significant number of SEND learners' EHTP plans.
I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah, from a lot of authorities I work in, there is still a little bit of a backlog with reviews being pushed back because of others haven't been pushed back. So it's kind of the SENCO is almost being hit with a double whammy, really, of, you know, the reviews have got to take place and there's just an increased backlog, I think.
There is. And there's a number of different factors towards that. I mean, you mentioned some. That a key one has often been, certainly in my experience where I worked until just over a year ago, was the lack of access that parents had to technology. That was a huge factor. But it is what it is. We cannot go back and change what's happened or what hasn't happened. And therefore, we've got to make a decision how we go forward. And every SENCO's got to do that. And it is. I know it's easier said than done, but it's what I've done. You sit and you have to rationalise. Mm-hmm. Well, I cannot go back and alter that, but I need to go forward. Yes, I might have certain reviews to catch up on. Yes, there might be so many coming up. So how can we do that? And it's going to differ for each individual school. Mm. I would advise any SENCO who is in that kind of position where they feel that it is very, very difficult to catch up, that I'd advise them to talk with the local authority, their link officer in the SEND team, because they have to remember, and I think I need to remind everyone yet again, that schools are not responsible for education, health and care plans, nor are they responsible for holding the reviews in law. The local authority is. If that holding the review is devolved by the local authority to a school, and they can require schools. They can't require colleges to do it, but they can require schools to do it, to hold the review. But it is about talking to your local SEND officer, explaining the problem. They're probably aware of it anyway, because, of course, they will be in touch with a number of schools. But explain to them. And if you've got a schedule where you think you might be able to work this one through, but it could take a little bit longer, then so be it. Nobody can, you know, there isn't a magic wand that anybody can wave. There is a... In law, there is a scheduled timeline for organising an EHCP annual review. So how many weeks notice, asking people's opinions and contributions, circulating those, holding the review, writing the report, and then the authority making a decision whether they're going to amend the plan, keep it as it is. The young person may not need the plan at all, but there is a timeline for that. And it is a case of share any pressures that you feel, let people know, understand that it is other people's responsibility and not just the Sencos to do this. Mm-hmm. And again, and I keep mentioning this, but yet again, it comes down to a whole school approach mm-hmm. of a Senco can share it with their line manager and explain to them. And they may, because I had once to do this, you might need your line manager mm-hmm. to also email the send officer and just explain the context and the situation. But I think the key thing is if you show someone that you are aware of it, you are prepared to be open about it, you are doing the best you can, you are organising it, and you will catch up, you know, on behalf of the local authority, I repeat that point, then I'm as confident can be that the kickback from the authority won't be kickback, it will just be positive acknowledgement of what you're trying to do.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right, that the Sencos will be under a lot of pressure at the moment, but yeah, just having that relationship with your local authority to give them a bit of background to what everyone's been through, I suppose. So would you say that actually the pandemic has been difficult for all of us, but has that provided opportunities for whole schools, maybe more on the mainstream side of things with Senco, how they are maybe a bit more collaborative in terms of involving teachers a little bit more with reviews, perhaps thinking about how they engage with the parents, especially during these times where parents might not be able to get on remote, you know, to access online meetings? Or do you think it's provided a little bit of an opportunity to reassess how they do EHCPs and their approach to it?
I think it's been a bit of an eye-opener. Yes. And as I mentioned a few minutes ago, to some people it's been a light bulb moment in terms of how they can do things and how they can do things more effectively. Because I think we need to remember that remote working hasn't been a failure or a disaster for everybody. There are a lot of special needs children and young people for whom remote working and remote access is an absolute godsend. Because it removes other pressures that they would feel being in school every day. And it has actually helped some. So I think it's, again, a case of taking a step back and looking at the whole picture of the impact that the pandemic has had. And not always throwing our hands up in the air and saying, oh, my God, this is because of the pandemic. Some children have felt better. And I certainly have come across a good number, particularly on the autistic spectrum, who felt they benefited from it. And their parents have as well. And I think, more schools that I've come into contact with, spoken with, worked with, and I'm still working with, have seen that they need to think a little bit more about a whole school approach to this, to working with particular children with particular kinds of needs, to building those relationships with parents. And I think certainly the way that some schools have managed to provide technology for parents has, again, I have to keep saying this, I'm speaking from experience, has actually brought parent and school closer together.
Mm.
Because, you know, school has been able to help. I know one school in North Leeds that made a tremendous effort over and above anything they got from the DfE in terms of laptops and technology, which were very, very slow at reaching that school. They managed to get 200 laptops by working with local firms and businesses, and they distributed those to parents. They already had really good school parent relationships, but my goodness, that the quality of that has just flown through the roof because those parents have appreciated the fact that the school and the head in particular and the Senco really made an incredible effort to help them in their situation. So, you know, Yes, I agree with what you've said. It's shown schools that maybe there is a different way to do things, and they do need to look at a more collaborative approach with parents and within school as well. Because really, a whole school approach that I've mentioned it lots, whole school approach is really, in essence, a collaborative approach. How do professionals work together and truly collaborate so that everybody benefits?
Yeah, I think the pandemic's thrown up, you know, both good and
oh,
bad.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Bad points around that, and yeah, I agree with you that you know, the whole school approach is the way to go, especially in that kind of mainstream environment where you've got quite a breadth of different professionals working with the SEND learners. So
yeah.
If just for our just as kind of like a wrap up, because I know I've had you a little bit longer than you said you would be available for.
I know, but never mind.
It's kind of, if you for any of the teachers that's listening out there, you've said about the whole school approach, but is there anything that a teacher within a mainstream school could start themselves to do in regards to an EHCP for a learner or a group of SEND learners that they can do that will make an impact on either meeting the learner's needs or the EHCP improvement? Is there any small, I'm not even saying the whole school, and that kind of comes from governors and SLT, but is there anything that an individual teacher can possibly do, I suppose?
Well, a truly whole school approach, a really effective one, should come from everybody. But I know what you mean. You've got to have leadership and coordination in this. In answer to your question, Neil, I think, yes, there is. I mean, it isn't just about looking at what's in the HCP. A really, really good SENCO will, and this is the case in schools that I look at, work with, go into, will have, besides the HCP, they'll have some variation on a pupil passport or a pupil profile. And one of the purposes of that is to actually put in there the key things that will help that child or young person. And my advice to anybody who wants to try and start making a difference is to look at those for the learners that you've got in your class and try and work out what things are in common. Because there is no way on this earth that I would ever expect anybody to try and meet the needs of every single child separately in a class that might number 25, 30, 34, 35 in some secondary settings. Mm. There's no way I would expect that. But what I would expect, I've done it, I would expect it, is to look for common threads of practice, which when you do something will meet a number of different needs all at the same time. And that is distinctly possible. There are a number of things that people can do. I mean, we haven't got time now, but there are a number of things and strategies and everyday just pedagogical things that people can do that will help different learners who've got different types of need, because very often those needs overlap. And that's what you need to do. And usually when I run some training for a school or a mat, I will talk about what I call a Venn diagram approach of looking at circles of need, but looking at where they overlap. Mm-hmm. And the bit that overlaps is what you need to do, because that's the bit that will meet different types of need. And that of course, helps you to build the relationships with those learners, which will usually, almost invariably mean that you'll go from good to even better, because you might be meeting need, but once you really improve the relationships you've got with those learners and they see that you're making an effort to meet their needs, you'll get something reciprocal as well. Mm-hmm. That relationship has to be a two-way one, but they will appreciate that and they will acknowledge that what you're actually doing is you're at least trying, and it's the trying that matters. If, you know, try things. If it doesn't work, it doesn't work. So what? Mm-hmm. But you've got to try.
Yeah, I think that's a lovely way to end. It's focusing on that.
Yeah,
interaction between teacher, support staff, and that and the learner themselves, and that's the way building that positive working relationship will get you possibly a little bit more information, a little bit more trust.
Absolutely,
to help meet those needs. Yeah, totally.
I think
that's a fantastic way to end. Thank you very much, Gary.
You're very welcome.
This afternoon.
You're welcome.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you very much. If you have missed the first half of the show with Gary, don't worry. It will be available after I finish the live show, so you can catch up on that if you need to. But for now, we're going to have the news and some adverts, and we'll see you on the other side.
Ofsted have admitted that its inspectors were not highlighting off-rolling when it was identified in schools. Ofsted has told the inspectors that they must use the specific term off-rolling in their report if they find it is taking place in a school. Ofsted defines off-rolling as the practice of removing a pupil from the school roll without a formal permanent exclusion. Or by encouraging a parent to remove their child from the school roll where the removal is primarily in the interest of the school rather than in the interest of the pupil. Off-rolling in these circumstances is a form of gaming. In an update to inspectors, it adds, some schools have issued press releases stating that off-rolling was not found because Ofsted did not use those words. Reports which have already been issued cannot be amended. Ofsted have reported in the Times Education Supplement to have told inspectors that reports must always use the following set threes to refer to off-rolling. This practice constitutes off-rolling according to Ofsted's definition.
The Guardian newspaper has reported that a survey of more than 20,000 working parents has found that 96% believe that not enough has been done to support parents with the cost of childcare.
One third of parents said they spent less on their rent or mortgage than they did on childcare.
100,000 parents signed a petition asking for an independent review of childcare funding and affordability. This has triggered a debate on childcare in Parliament this week. The Organisation for Economic Cooperation and Development has released data which puts the UK as the third highest childcare system in the world. A full-time place costs on average £12,376 a year. The Department for Education said parents' ability to claim 33 hours a week during term time For three and four-year-olds could save them up to £5,000 a year. This has been your daily education news briefing.
Need support with your phonics teaching? Did you know Oxford University Press now has three DfE validated programs to help you? Read, write, ink phonics, floppy phonics, and the brand new essential letters and sounds. Essential letters and sounds will get all your children reading well quickly using phonics books you may already have in your classroom. Developed by the Knowledge Schools Trust English Hub, it's affordable, easy to use, and makes teaching phonics with letters and sounds more effective. Whatever your school's phonics needs, Oxford has the solution. To find out more and receive support from your expert local educational consultant, visit oxfordprimary.com/phonics. Every teacher loves station, right?
Imagine getting a selection of fun, beautiful and unique stationery items designed and selected especially for teachers delivered through your door every month. You need to check out teacherslovestationery.club.
I'm always so excited when the box arrives. It's such a treat.
My teacherslovestationery.club is just a little treat for myself every month.
Teachers Love Stationery.club.
Creative Resources, made for teachers by teachers, at Creative Resources, we've been rethinking what a classroom can be. We've created a huge range of more than 2,500 original and exciting resources that span across more than 50 different subject areas.
Whether you're looking for primary or secondary level resources, careers options, PSET, arts or humanities, Creative Resources have the resources for you. We offer full curriculum packages and unique challenging escape rooms themed on topics such as Shakespeare, Tudors and Fractions. We have quizzes, task cards, Tarsia puzzles and lots more. Better still, more than 100 resources can be accessed for free. Just visit our website www.creativeresources.com. You can get 10% off any order you make on our website by using the discount code TT Radio. Creative resources made for teachers by teachers. Every teacher loves stationery, right? Imagine getting a selection of fun, beautiful and unique stationery items designed and selected especially for teachers delivered through your door every month. You need to check out teacherslovestationery.club.
I'm always so excited about the box arrives. It's such a treat. My teacher's love stationery box is just a little treat for myself every month. It's always full of delightful surprises and items, including some really cool quality stationery brands like fan castells, and because you never know what you're going to get, it makes it even more fun and special when you get it. It feels really great to be sporting around the business that's run by real teachers. I can't help feeling like they just know what I'm going to enjoy in stationery wise better than I do myself.
Visit teacherslovestationery.club and enter code TT Radio when you buy your first stationery box to save £2 today. Teacherslovestationery.club. Need support with your phonics teaching? Did you know Oxford University Press now has three DfE validated programs to help you? Read, write in phonics, floppy phonics, and the brand new Essential Letters and Sounds. Essential Letters and Sounds will get all your children reading well quickly, using phonics books you may already have in your classroom. Developed by the Knowledge Schools Trust English Hub, it's affordable, easy to use, and makes teaching phonics with letters and sounds more effective. Whatever your school's phonics needs, Oxford has the solution. To find out more and receive support from your expert local educational consultant,
visit oxfordprimary.com/phonics.
And welcome back to the Drive Home Show with me, Neil Mullen. In case you missed the first half of the show, we have been discussing this week about EAT pay plans and how, you know, good points of them, bad points of them with Gary Freeman. In the first half of the show, made some really interesting and valid points around EAT pay plans. So in case you missed that, it would be good to go back and listen back to that once I've finished the show. In this last 20-25 minutes that we've got together, I'm kind of going to review what we discussed with Gary, but also add in a couple of my own personal experiences around EAT pay plans. So in the first half, we were discussing about the discrepancies around EATP plans and the templates around that. So each local authority will have their own EATP template, and they will use that within their local authority, and we'll give that to schools to input the information in regards to, you know, diagnosis of need, background to each of the areas, and crucially what Gary was talking about, the section F, which is around meeting the learner's need and what the learner will access in terms of support, whether that be, you know, teaching assistant support, whether that be interventions, whether that be therapy, whether that be physical equipment, and that kind of varies between each local authority will have their own template. So in my experience, I worked at a special school in Newcastle, and we got a learner who moved from the Gateshead area. For any of you out there that don't know, Newcastle and Gateshead are fairly close, but their local authority borders change within kind of a space of a mile. So Newcastle have their own EATP template, Gateshead has theirs, and kind of information that should have been there on the Gateshead template to incorporate onto the Newcastle one wasn't there, or was contained within a different section of the plan that it shouldn't have been in. So EATP plans and how they're laid out and how information is transferred when a send learner moves from one school to another, and that can even be in terms of they may move from primary to a secondary across a local authority, can be wildly different. And it can be frustrating as teachers when you're going through that EATP plan to find the crucial bits of information that you need in terms of understanding what support they might need, understanding their cognitive and learnability, understanding social care needs, for example, lots of different things like that. And it can be quite frustrating. Additionally, and this is me speaking personally, is I also find within local authorities and within EATP plans that the way that they are written can vary as well. There can be some really, really good EATP plans that are clearly written. You get a clear overview of what needs that particular learner has. You get a clear overview of what support they need in place to help them access the curriculum within a school, or what they need in terms of, you know, their background and how that might impact on their learning. But within the same local authority and within the same review cycle, staff can change, approaches to writing it can change. We've also got to think about the additional complexity of the pandemic last year, where EHCP reviews will have been primarily conducted via Teams or Zoom. So information that may be crucial, may need to be put in there or amended, may not have been amended for whatever reason. So it can actually be quite frustrating in terms of if you have quite a number of send learners, particularly mainstream-wise, going and accessing that EHCP plan and reading it can be quite frustrating because it may not give you the full picture. And a bit like what Gary said before, you may have to invest quite a bit of time to get to know that learner, gain a good positive working relationship, gain that trust to enable you to fully understand what needs they have, how are you going to help them, and then eventually get that relayed back to the SENCO or even senior leadership team. So it can be quite frustrating the way that they're written as well. So that is kind of a bad point. And I kind of titled this week's show The Good, the Bad and the Ugly. Now the ugly for me is that for whatever reason, sometimes local authorities will if a send learner has moved around and they moved to different local authorities and has moved quite a bit for whatever reason, then local authorities may not have updated EETP plans as they should have, and that can happen for whatever reason. So one of my learners last year recently moved to the area from a different local authority, and the year before had moved from a different part of the country as well. So his EETP plan hadn't been updated for 2 years. So a lot of the information that I was reading about this particular learner, and then actually meeting the learner in class face-to-face and realising that actually some of these things were out of date and they hadn't, you know, he had progressed and didn't need support with a particular need. Other things had happened in their lives, so actually from their previous EETP plan, that learner had developed SEMH issues, and that was not in his EETP plan, nor had his parents really been consulted or really been kept up to date with it. So when that learner came to ourselves and we updated it, because where I'm at currently, we do 6 month EHCP reviews. Just that's how we have done it. The parents were really, really happy because we'd actually updated it with relevant information. They knew it was up to date. They knew in 6 month time we were going to review it for when they were going to move on to another establishment, so that actually the information was accurate, that the next organisation that learner moved on to would get up-to-date information and could start working with that learner pretty much straight away and get a real overview of their needs. So actually EHTP plans, and if you talk to colleagues that work in special schools, if you talk to SENCOs, the variation is a major thing in terms of A, the quality of the information that's in there, B, you know, the quality of the review of it, also the templates that are used. So some local authorities will go quite heavy in terms of what information they require for each section. Others will be less so. So again, you may get a plan that's really, really rich with information. Sometimes that might be actually not needed, might just be too much information. And sometimes you may get plans that are not enough information. In addition, when we spoke with Gary in the first half of the show, obviously there is the obligation to review an EHTP plan every 12 months, and that's kind of what most schools and most establishments will do, just purely out of practicality, because as Gary has said before previously, that, you know, the practicalities of setting up reviews, and they're usually about an hour long. If you've got quite a number of send learners in a big mainstream secondary school, that can be quite challenging, quite difficult. And obviously because of the pandemic, that some of those reviews may have not taken place for whatever reasons, and sometimes that can be that can lead to a backlog in dealing with that. But then that brings us on to a major problem that I've experienced with EETP reviews is the collaboration with parents. Parents of SEND learners will vary in terms of their buy-in to the EETP process. Some parents will want to be heavily involved and will provide up-to-date information and want to know any changes that professionals might offer or suggest, and will come to the EETP review and really want to see the progress of the child, want to see, you know, want to update the EETP plan and make sure it's right for not only them, but for meeting the needs of their child. Consequently, there's always a flip side, as there is with any child, that there'll be some parents that don't buy into that EETP process and won't attend reviews. and therefore we're missing out on that collaboration between professionals and parents and education and care, where we're not getting everyone's viewpoint, everyone's not coming together to share those views. Similarly, that can be said of local authorities. They may not have an EHEP officer in place, so schools may just carry out the review themselves. Schools that have links with the health professionals and care professionals may also not be able to attend, and they may also not, you know, may also not pass on key information to that review. They may not share the key information or send it along to that review. They may end up not providing key information. And it's kind of, how do we make that approach more collaborative? I suppose we could say that from the pandemic, we've now got a new way of working in terms of accessing video meetings. So even if education, care, parents can't physically be there, they can still be there in some part, whether that be, you know, via video or via loudspeaker, and they can put forward their views. So it's probably not an excuse, but there's different ways that we can engage with those people to have buy-in. It's also about how we create those cultures within schools. For me, working predominantly in specialist environments, how do we replicate that within the mainstream environment? Now, that with Gary, it's kind of an everybody approach to that, in terms of it's got to be a whole school approach where everyone's going to buy into doing their very best to improve the outcomes for those SEND learners, and also improve the process of EHEP reviews and improve the way in which they are conducted, the information that's supplied, the collaboration between the people involved with that SEND learner, and even the learner themselves, because that SEND learner within that mainstream school will have a good understanding of what support they would like to have, and what works well for them and what doesn't work so well. So it's about coming together, I suppose, and really how we go about it, I suppose, is what I'm trying to say. Now, there's difficulties around that, in terms of, you know, we are just probably coming out of 18 months of a pandemic where, you know, reviews have not taken place, or if they have, then information might be missed. We've got anxieties from learners about coming back to school. We've got teachers under significant pressure to help learners catch up. We have key targets in terms of catching up for learners. You know, the catch up seems to be on the agenda. We've also got to think about SENCO's workload in terms of, from the pandemic, there may be even more needs. So EHEP applications may have been made for learners who previously have not had additional needs, but may have developed them through the pandemic may have anxiety, may have social, emotional, mental health, and then have subsequently applied for an EACP plan. There may also be pressures on the senior leadership team and governors, and EHCP plans may still be an important part of the agenda, but may not be a focus for as much improvement as maybe they could be. I think there's a EHCP plans for me are a good resource. As a previous head teacher I work for, it should be the one document where any professional, any parent, anybody really, Ofsted, a person off the street, could go in and look at that document and get an overview of a particular learner and their needs and what they're accessing and background. And it should be, you know, a one-stop shop really for finding out about SEND learners' needs and kind of everything associated with them. Sometimes that's not the case, and sometimes it can either be, you know, poorly written. The template might not be conducive to getting all the right information in there. Reviews may not provide any real updates when they actually probably should do. You know, especially I think more so within mainstream schools, there's probably more problems and issues in terms of updating EATP plans, because trying to gather the evidence from a wider range of people and professionals, and that's mainly Senko's role within that mainstream environment, whereas within a specialist environment, it's usually one teacher or a smaller number of teachers, and Senko won't have as much pressure on their timetable. They may not even teach within a special school. It might just be that's their specific role. So it can be really, really hard to gather that evidence. It can be really hard for those mainstream teachers to actually, you know, especially in really, really big secondary schools where, you know, you may teach upwards of, you know, 200, 300 learners in a week, and remembering that specific SEND learner in that specific class and trying to think about any updates that you might be able to provide to the Senko, thinking about, you know, how you as a practitioner can help that learner. That can be really, really difficult. And actually with all the pressures that we've got now in terms of, you know, we're going back into a new wave of working with less restrictions, but still pressures in terms of catching up, still pressures in terms of, you know, we've still got to meet the needs of these SEND learners, but they may be more SEND learners than previously before. Those SEND learners may present with more needs because of the pandemic. They may actually be just an increased workload in general in terms of, you know, we've had a period of remote learning and then now we're going back to face-to-face teaching. So that can be a change. And EHCP reviews will start within the next week or two, because that's the nature of them. They're for most schools, EHCP reviews will take place throughout the academic year, just purely based on numbers. So actually, as we try to get back in the swing of things, those SEND learners that we have within our organisations will have their review. So even just trying to get back into the swing of things of actually getting those key bits of information and passing out the Senko along with our, you know, day-to-day teaching and planning and marking and all the other things that are associated with it. So I think for our mainstream teachers and support staff that are working with the SEND learners, actually, EHCP plans are really, really important to find out, you know, what support and what provision that they've got in place and background to their needs and what works well and what not works well, but can also be can also, you know, not give us a true reflection of that learner, and can also be an additional workload in terms of, as Gary said previously, about actually it needs to be everybody needs to want to improve the ESTP process, improve the plan for that learner, to create a culture within that school of, you know, it's everybody's responsibility to improve those ESTP plans and improve the needs of those learners. Then within that mainstream school context, both primary, secondary, even college wise, it can be tremendously difficult for professionals to actually think about, you know, that additional workload and think about that additional time that they may have to invest in that learner to get to know them, to then provide that little bit of extra quality information that maybe could enhance the EHCP plan. Again, we haven't really discussed it, but SENCOs will be under an enormous amount of pressure, not only in terms of trying to clear a backlog of EHCP reviews, but also from parents, from parents worried about their child going back, where they may have additional updates around the child's needs, around background to the child during the pandemic. So SENCOs will be under enormous amount of pressure. Not only that, but they will also have teachers coming with their own thoughts on particular learners that might not have EHCP plans. We're talking about learners with EHCP plans, and they'll have funding attached to that. But there'll also be learners within mainstream primary and secondary provision that will have additional needs but don't have an EHCP plan. So they will obviously still need some support in place, or some interventions, or some acknowledgement of their needs within that context. So that comes under the SENCO's role as well. So it is, that's why I kind of titled this show as EHCP, the good, the bad and the ugly, because EHCP plans are inherently good. They're a good tool for teachers. They're a good tool for professionals, and it provides opportunities to collaborate with one another in terms of, you know, educational health and care all coming together, including the parents as well. But that's only possible when the culture of the school is good, and everybody's all in the same boat around, you know, wanting to improve that EHCP plan for that particular learner, and go on the extra mile by investing in that time to get to know the learner and making them feel that you're there to help them in any way, shape that you can. And also kind of the ugly as well, because some EHCP plans are not well written. Some haven't been reviewed as they should have been. And some don't contain the vital information that you might need. So I hope by speaking with Gary at the beginning that you got a flavour of where we're at with EHCP plans, how that you can, as an individual practitioner, make that bit of difference, and also how it could be, you know, how the whole school approach can really help EHCP plans and for those learners with additional needs as well. And yeah, I hope you've enjoyed our show on EHCP plans. Up next is Lucy at 6 o'clock. So please tune in to her show. It's going to be a really, really good one. As for the next couple of weeks in my show, we've potentially got another couple of guests lined up. An educational author for SEND, and potentially a head teacher at a specialist school as well. Get hopefully they're going to confirm within the next few weeks, or hopefully a couple of cracker shows lined up. Thank you very much for listening. Please tune in to Lucy Shaw coming up next. I hope that you all have a very, very good week. Enjoy the rest of this week as well, as much as you can. If you missed the show, it will be available soon after this one. I've been Neil Mullen. That's been your Drive Home Show. Have a good rest of the evening and take care.